or someone you love wish you had a better job? Want to be happier on your current job? Don't even have a job? Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko.
One of my many weaknesses is I interrupt. I don't know why. I think I've always been a chronic interruptus person. And everything I've ever read about effective communication is that interrupting is the worst thing that could ever happen. In fact, Lee Steinberg, who is a guest on the show, he's a super sports agent, he literally said that. He said, the very worst thing you can do is interrupt. And he told me this about 10 years ago. And you know what? I still interrupt. I know it feels rude to people. It makes people feel invalidated and thus more likely to be closed to what you say. You know, and then you're making your point while their mind is still focused on what they're saying as you interrupt. So the person may not even fully hear what you're saying. I mean, I rationalize it. I have all these stupid rationalizations. I say, oh, well, interrupting saves time. I mean, after all, I'm sure I know exactly what they're going to say. And I may be right. I may be wrong, but I may be right. But I'm less likely to, you know, if my goal is to have an effective conversation, get something done, even get the person to like me, that's less likely to happen. Whatever increases in efficiency I get are going to be far outweighed. Then I also think, yeah, well, maybe interrupting, and I think this unconsciously, that interrupting shows I'm motivated, I'm enthusiastic, that I care. Well, more likely people are interpreting it as rudeness. Again, you know, some of this is cultural. When I grew up in this New York Jewish environment, that was kind of the norm. You ever watch a Woody Allen movie? I don't think they ever finish a sentence without interrupting. But in the rest of the world, at least the world that I live, you know, certainly here in the Bay Area, you know, when you interrupt, it's seen as more likely seen as rudeness, or that I can't control myself, or even that I'm a narcissist, you know, and don't give a crap what anybody else thinks. It's just, you know, what I say matters. It's huge negative. I think that sometimes people interrupt, you know, as a way of trying to show how smart they are. You know, you interrupt because, I got it. They don't say, I got it. But the sense is, yeah, I know what you're going to say. I'm smart enough to figure it out. Well, you know what? That may be true. You know, if you can pick up things quickly, that is a sign of being smart. But that is so outweighed by all the above. So if we truly care about being effective, if we truly care about being perceived positively, especially in the workplace, which could cost you your job if you're not, and then you could be super competent and still, you know, be perceived as negative, as rude, as not a team player. Those are all metaphors or, you know, shorthand for the kind of behaviors that include interrupting. So I wish I could do this. I don't know how to do this. I wish I would make it like a no, absolutely no negotiable rule, no interrupting, period. And in fact, when somebody finishes talking, I'd wait a full second before I open my trap. That would make people feel I was really listening to them rather than I was just waiting for them to finish so they could, you know, so I could offer my pearls. And it also then allows their mind to clear. So it's available, you know, to truly process whatever my pearls might be. Anyway, here's the problem. I don't know how to fix it. So I brought in a hired gun, somebody who could really help me with this. She doesn't interrupt at all. Well, maybe that's not true. She interrupts me sometimes because she gets sick of me. Who would get sick of me other than some of you listeners? It is the Napa County Superintendent of Schools and my wife, Dr. Barbara Nemko. Dr. Nemko, do you have a cure for what ails me?
Duct tape.
Yeah, thanks. No, come on, be good.
Everything.
No, it works for everything. But seriously, first of all, honestly, you know, I know many of our listeners have this kind of problem too. Do you have a solution at all?
The solution is to listen to your mother in your head. And she always said it's rude if you interrupt somebody. So every time you're tempted to do it, she's sitting on your shoulder going, no, that would be rude. Just wait. You'll get your turn.
Do you, you know, honestly, how much would you say, how much less do you interrupt than I do?
80%.
Right. And so what is different about, What's my problem that you don't have? And, you know, you are much better liked in the world than I am. And by the way, dear listeners, this is not about me. It's important to have concrete examples. So this is really a focus on the whole question of interrupting. It's not, I'm just using me as an example because I have the disease so badly. Interested in curing me. I'm interested in hopefully that we will offer suggestions that will be of help to all of you. Anyway, go ahead.
I think that a lot of people take a longer time than you would take to get the idea explained. And sometimes it is frustrating because you know where they're going. And in fact, you could say it in 50% of the time and 10% of the words. So it's hard not to just jump in. But that is disempowering and somewhat dismissive of the person who's struggling to get the idea out. And so sometimes you just have to dig your nails into your palms and just say, I'm going to wait this out.
You know, actually, I do think it's like all habits. You know, there's been endless books, you know, self-help books don't make money if they simply say, well, just make a new habit of it and stop. You know, but in the end, you know, most changing of behavior of any sort really is a matter of staying very conscious. Use the term having your mother sit on your shoulder and be the reminder. But, you know, whether it's with that metaphor or not, it is making this top of mind for you where you just say, you know, I've had clients write one word on their hand as a reminder. So I might write the word, you know, I for interrupt, or, you know, given the current kind of belief. No, we want to say the positive. So C for continue, letting them to continue or whatever. But doing whatever it takes to
let me interrupt. How about P for patience?
Yeah, okay, see? Now, what was the advantage of that interruption?
To be funny.
Yeah, okay. I do think that keeping it top of mind, whether it is, and this is really quite potent, if you decide you're not going to interrupt, or you're going to lose weight, or you're going to be ask more questions, or whatever it is, 10 times a day, maybe even every time you put something in your mouth, every time you eat or drink something, you say, okay, patience, patience. So that what it does is it actually changes the hard wiring in your brain. So that memory, that notion of not interrupting, becomes the top item. Now, you can't do that forever because you've got a million other things to think about. But dear listeners, let's say your problem related to work, let's say it's whether it's interrupting or it's that you're too bossy or you're too passive or that you are really not working hard enough or whatever it is. Think of one word that encapsulates that, like harder for working harder, patience if you're interruptive, smarter, getting more knowledgeable, you know, whatever it is, what's your one word? For one day only, every time you eat something or drink something, you say that word aloud with expression. And doing that will simply just, it's not rocket science. It just, obviously it makes it a more, a larger component of your top of mind memory. Barbara, do you think that's BS or you think that's legitimate?
No, I think it strengthens the connection between what you want, what you're doing, and what you want to do.
You know, I want to make strengthen a connection here too. You know, between what? Between you, me, my dear listeners, and KALW. Nobody's going to lie. I can't lie to you, and you know I never lie to you. That it's not fun to ask for money. It's not who I am. You know, I'm a counselor type dude, but we need to ask for money. Because it is the way the station stays alive. And also, and here's, now this is selfish. You know, there's only one way, really, one of the main ways that KELW gets a sense of whether anybody likes my show or not, who likes work with Martin Emko, gets help with their work life, is how many dollars are donated during this hour. And I literally mean only this 1 hour, because there's this new concept of shorter is better. We don't, you know, nobody likes long pledge drives, membership drives, whatever you call them. So the goal is that it's only going to be this 1 hour where you, if you want to support work with Marty Nemko, this is it. And Barbara Nemko, of course. And so, of course, we like to twist your arm a little bit, or not twist, we like to induce you to do this. So before I ask you to call 1-800-525-9917 or even go to KALW.org, I'm going to seduce you. The thing that
Wait a minute. Watch that.
Yeah, right. I'm getting old. And so, you know, when you get old, you start to have, you try to want to synthesize everything you've, you know, maybe contributed in your lifetime. And I've done it in my latest book. It's called How to Do Life, What They Didn't Teach You in School. It's my best advice over about careers, money, meaning of life, even recreation, every relationships, everything. In 160 pages, kind of punchy to read, but as substantive as I can be. And so for a mere $75, you can get a copy of that. I'll autograph it too. And the good feeling of supporting public radio, and every one of those dollars does support work with Marty Nemco and Barbara Nemco. And I saved the best for last. We have a number of times before, during these membership drives, we have donated a brunch where up to 12 people, no more, can, on June 30th, which just happens to be my birthday, can come to the show, sit in on the show. Barbara will be on the show with me.
And there'll be birthday cake.
That's all I need is more sugar. Anyway, there'll be healthier and deliciouser things than that. Is that a word, deliciouser? More delicious stuff. And it's a very fun thing to do. You get to see the show, get to meet Barbara and me, give your input on the show, great networking opportunity, and last of all, it's fun. So for all of those reasons, $150 for one person, $275 for two, and one more reason before I even give out the phone number. I know I'm supposed to give out the phone number more. We have very nice people. Their names are James Bloom and Catherine Frank. They live in Berkeley. And that if we do indeed get 12 people to come to my brunch and therefore support work with Marty Nemco and KELW, they will kick in an extra 500 buckos. So,
wow.
So now I'm going to give out the phone number and invite people to come to brunch. Support KELW, support work with Marty Nemco. This is the only time, this hour, because shorter is better. Nobody likes long membership drives. The phone number. All right. 1-800-525-9917. That's It's 1-800-525-9917. Or if you don't like to talk to our friendly, lovely volunteers like Bien, and you'd rather do this anonymously, not honestly, but like to do it online, you just go to KALW.org. Now, I've been talking a long time. We said shorter is better. So, Barbara, I want you to have the last word. Why should people support work with Marty Nemco right now, come to brunch with us, get my book, How to Do Life? Why should they do any of that?
Because the fact that they're listening to this show indicates that they like the show. And work with Marty Nemco is a slightly different kind of show for KALW. So if you want to see it remain on the air, the reason it has stayed on the air all these 20-something years is because of listener support, because listeners call in during pledge drive, pledge money, and then the station managers and the decision makers look at that and say, whoa, this obviously has a following. This has a listenership. So if ever something that you heard on this show helped you get a raise, a better job, tailor your job to better fit your strengths and made you happier on the job, this is a wonderful way to make a repayment or a pay it forward so that other people will have the same opportunities in the future.
And Joanne Marr just whispered in my ear, starting October 1st, I start my 25th year on the station. I can't stand that I'm that old, but it doesn't matter. The point is, let's support KELW. Let's support work with Marty Nemco. Come to brunch. Get my book, How to Do Life, What They Didn't Teach You in School. 1-800-525-9917. That's 1-800-525-9917 or KALW.org. I want to talk a little more about changing of behavior with interruption. For listeners just joining us, we're talking about a terrible habit that really does kills people's careers and, frankly, their personal lives, and one that is one of mine. It's one of my many bad qualities, that I interrupt constantly unless I'm really, really vigilant about it. And like in meetings, you know, the person who's interrupting at meetings is just seen as a jerk. And you really do have to stop. But I'm not doing a good job of stopping. We've talked about a couple of ways to deal with it. Barbara, do you have any more advice on how people like me and everybody else who's a chronic interrupter, or maybe the opposite, a chronic too quiet person, what we can do beyond the behavioral. Is there something psychological deeper that's making us do this kind of crap and that can get us to stop?
Well, it probably is one of two things. Either it's insecurity, and so you feel that people won't notice you're there unless you constantly throw in some great idea, or it's because you are overconfident and you think you know everything. So I think in terms of the insecurity, one of my favorite phrases is still waters run deep. Whether that's true or not, people typically will give you the benefit of the doubt if you're quiet.
Yeah, it's true, especially at meetings. Something I have taught a number of my clients, the smartest, if you can retain some self-control, at a meeting, one of the wisest things you can do is to sit and silent. Look very engaged. Don't look like you're playing with your crackberry, the crackberry prayer where you're leaning down and looking at your iPhone or whatever. But listen, nod, pay attention, maybe take notes, and also be really listening carefully to what's said. And then at the end of when a topic is being discussed, you can slowly, without any franticness, raise your hand and say, in listening to all of you, I'm wondering if this might be a good idea. And then in a nice, measured way, then you make your point. No interruption, no nothing. And yes, because you have been silent, some people at least are wondering, I'm wondering what she's thinking. And so that is a very useful technique, absolutely.
And also that gives you the benefit. You've heard everybody else's wisdom.
Right.
And you may have some idea that hasn't been said. So it's a great opportunity to say, I heard a lot of fabulous ideas, and I have one small tweak to add. So you're modest, and then you say something that relates to what someone else said, and if you give them credit, they love you.
Yes.
Following up on what Marty said,
yep.
What about if we also? So that makes him a genius because you're adding to what he said. He preens, and you have the chance to add whatever it was that you were thinking without people thinking that you're obnoxious.
I agree. You know, there's one. I want to take one more shot at this underlying motivation question. I think the reason I interrupt is some kind of a very hardwired time consciousness. I'm always worried that I won't have enough time to get in everything I want to get in on this show, as much help as I want to give, or that people will consider me taking up too much time, so I talk too fast, or, it's all time consciousness, which ends up, really being foolish, because as I watch the most effective people on the planet, some of my clients, but also as I watch C-SPAN, the people who are most effective don't have that time consciousness. They're not rushing. And of course, we all know that type A behavior, there was a classic book called Type A Behavior in Your Heart, that being time conscious is likely to cause heart attacks. So for every possible reason, career-wise, personal-wise, it really makes sense to try to abandon some of that time consciousness. Would you agree that that's at the root of perhaps mine and other people's tendency to interrupt?
Certainly could be. I don't know. But I'll tell you what my interrupting problem is.
Mm.
I rarely interrupt people. In fact, frequently on the radio, I'm told I don't interrupt enough because if somebody calls in, I'll let them go on and on and on, even if they're repeating themselves because I'm so fearful of being rude.
Right.
But my problem is if I'm talking to someone, and both in person and on the phone even worse, and we both start talking at the same time, for some reason, I can't shut myself up, and so I'll talk over them. And that's a terrible habit that I need to learn how to break.
Well, let me take the other side for a minute. Let's take a cosmic justice perspective. Let's say you are talking with someone who is long-winded and who isn't that bright and or who you feel you know right away what she is going to say, and you're a busy, very busy woman. Today, for even on a Sunday, after you're doing this radio show, you're going to be on stage as Sarah Straikosh in Funny Girl at the Napa Valley Opera House, which is sold out. So your time is valuable. So from a cosmic justice perspective as to where the biggest good is going to derive, doesn't it make sense for you to interrupt so that you can spend your time on more worthy activities than listening to him or her drone on? And in this case, on the radio, For my listeners have plenty of options. They don't have to listen to Work with Marty Nemco. They could be doing a million other things. So if one of my callers is indeed you know, not making the best use of that airtime for my listeners, isn't, don't I have a cosmic responsibility to interrupt that person, even if it does offend them and appear rude, for the larger good of benefiting my audience?
Absolutely. I totally agree with the part about the radio, because you don't want your audience to be bored and change the channel. What I was saying is, I can't do that. I know I should. But that's
right.
Because I was so brought up with mama on my shoulder saying, don't be rude, that it's very hard for me. And yet, if two people start talking at the same time, I have a hard time stopping myself. So maybe I need to write on my palm an S for stop and let them say what they had to say, and then I'll have time to say what I have to say. Nobody's going to shut me up totally. I mean, they'll let me talk after they talk, but it always feels bad when I do it, and yet I can't seem to stop myself.
Well, maybe the more nuanced answer, which is what I like, I think we really want to focus on, is that it should not be a blanket rule, never interrupt, and it should not be a blanket rule, you're always right, but to keep that cosmic justice perspective in mind. What would net yield the greatest good at this moment in time? Of course, our little individual actions are not going to change the world necessarily, but what would result in greater net good to that person, to the solving of the problem, to the amount of, you know, to your time? And simply deciding at that point, rather than, as I have been guilty of, which is unconsciously interrupting without regard to whether it's going to yield the greatest net good, would the wisest thing to be for us to think about interrupting as a tool to use as when it would yield the greatest good, and not interrupting when it wouldn't yield the greatest good? What do you think, Barb?
Well, I think if you think of the term judicious, use that tool very judiciously.
I'm going to conclude this little segment by saying, the way you just said it implies that it's something you're going to do very rarely. I'm going to, perhaps this is just self-serving, but I think that there really are frequently, not just so infrequently, there are times when interrupting is appropriate. And there are many times that it's not. So rather than give some rule about it, rarely use it or whatever, the call I'm going to make to listeners and ask your Barbara, I'm going to give you the last word in terms of responding to this. I simply want to raise your consciousness about interrupting. Dear listeners, in work and out, if you are thinking about interrupting, ask yourself, take the nanosecond that it takes to decide, is this a wise thing to do? Is this cosmically wise to interrupt? What's your reaction to that kind of rule of thumb that I've now just kind of we've hammered out over this half 20 minutes or whatever?
I think it's a fine rule of thumb, but I would say in the workplace, be extra careful. If you do it socially, you interrupt. The worst thing that's going to happen is somebody may think, this jerk's always interrupting me. But if you do it in the workplace, it can be a negative. So in the workplace, I would be extra cautious about interrupting people, particularly if it's your boss.
I keep my word. I said you'd have the last word. You have your last word. So now I'm going to have a word, I'm going to do this very briefly. Come to brunch, June 30th. Barbara and me will be happy to host you here at KALW. It's going to cost you some bucks. It's $150 for one person and $275 for a couple, but the money doesn't go to me. The money doesn't go to anything other than KALW. So if you're a supporter of public radio, if you're a supporter of having a brief pledge, you know, membership drive so that we can stop this fast, the goal is to get this done in 7 days, in and out, and in my case, in this show, 1 hour. If you want to support Work with Marty Nemco, come to brunch. It's, you know, it's not that cheap, but I've done it before, and people say they love it. So come to brunch on June 30th. You call 1-800-525-9917 or go to kalw.org. And we have a match, so that a really great match. James Bloom and Catherine Frank of Berkeley said that if all we need to do is 12 people, and we don't want to have a cattle call at this brunch. We like it to be very human. So 12 people is all that are going to come to the brunch. But if 12 people total pledge the $150 a person or $275 for a couple and come to brunch, they're going to kick in for KELW another $500. And that's, remember, every dollar, you know, my show is a little anomalous for KELW. KELW has a lot of very different programming. So the people who listen to this show don't necessarily listen to all of KELW. So, you know, the people who listen to your call, I'm not sure I have the, you know, it's a very, very popular show, but I'm not sure that there's a lot of overlap between those people and me. So if you want to support work with Marty Nemco, this is the time to do it. 1-800-525-9917 and KALW.org, either one. And, you get, for $75, you get an autographed copy of my book, How to Do Life, What They Didn't Teach You in School, which I am kind of proud of. And so, there you go. And Barbara, you get the last word, and then brief little, just, we keep these brief, these donation breaks short so we can get back to programming, which is what everybody wants. Say something brief.
Yes. One other reason to come, aside from supporting the show, which is huge, networking. You will meet very interesting people at the brunch, and very often people make connections that lead to outside of the brunch opportunities. So, the people who are coming are good people to get to know.
Yeah, they're very generous. They're nice people. They like work with Marty Nemco. They're good for either personal or business connections. But simply, let's not treat this as an instrumentality that it's all about getting something. It'll just be fun, too, as well. 1-800-525-9917. Come to brunch June 30th. Celebrate my birthday with me. 1-800-525-9917. Okay, let's get off of this this interruption topic. I keep what's called a nugget file. Another file is that I go through my day and my life and my crazy 70-hour work weeks, which I do love. Every time I either get an insight or I learn something from a client or I read something that I think is worthy of my KELW listeners, I simply have a Microsoft Word file that's called Nuggets, and I write down my nuggets. And by the way, dear listeners, there is no better way to synthesize your ongoing learning to improve your career or your personal self-help growth or whatever it is, then having that little nugget file, because we all learn these cool little things as we go through life, and then they kind of fly in and out of our heads. So if you make a habit of putting down into your, you know, into your iPhone memo or your desktop computer, whatever you want, these little nuggets, and then periodically read them, that's a really great way to synthesize your growth. So here are some of the nuggets that I've put down recently and thought you might find of interest. And Barbara, I'm very eager to get your reaction. You can be nice and say great point, but you can also be critical, or you have a question about it, or amplify. So
critical?
Yeah, critical. Now, you've gotten nicer. In your old age, you've gotten nicer. You're not quite as mean as you used to be. Not talking about a backhanded compliment, not quite as mean as you. I didn't mean it that way. You're actually fairly nice. okay. A way to...
Trouble. Just pointing out.
Yes.
I'm just saying, as they say.
Yes.
okay, go on.
There was a study that came out of a joint venture between Yale and Hebrew University that found that the more that people value happiness, the more they focus on selfish desires and not on others. I found that interesting and it resonated with me. Do you have any, you know, that people who are, they want to be happier, so they go and they buy these cars, or they go and they laugh. They're all about fun and having a good time. You know, they don't really, they're more kind of self-absorbed. Does that match with your experience with folks?
Hell no. You just described your wife.
I better change topics fast. Okay, here's another one.
I think you have a particular bias against any kind of materialism. If I paid attention to everything that you said, I would have drapes that were 40 years old.
What drapes? There'd be no drapes. There'd be no drapes.
We're currently, just for fun, we'll let everybody know, we currently have a 35-year-old sofa that I want to change, and Marty looks at me as though I have grown two heads, because why would anybody consider possibly even replacing a perfectly good, very dirty, very old 35-year-old sofa? So that's your bias. I think if the only thing that a person is about is fun, then yes, it could be true that you're not contributing very much and you are very selfish and hedonistic. But there is nothing wrong with trying to make as much fun out of every day while still being productive and doing good things. There's nothing wrong with fun and being happy. this is, life is not a dress rehearsal. You only get one chance. And so make the most of it. Do something every day that's fun for you. For me, sometimes it's nothing more than a trip to the library and being able to take out five different books on tape to listen to in the car. But do something that makes you happy. There's no reason to spend your time being depressed if you can find little ways that are doable and easy to cheer yourself up and be happy.
I know this sounds Calvinist and sounds horrible, but I can't be 100% sure I'm right. But again, in the spirit, what I like about public radio and just in general, I like discourse, where there are different perspectives presented. I really think that there is a very defensible position that says that fun has no purpose. You know, and this is sounding very Buddhist and Zen or whatever, but really we are infinitely small. We are dust motes in the history of mankind. We are nothing in the scheme of things. And to the extent to which there is any importance in this thing called our life, it's really how much contribution we make. And I swear I'm not trying to sound sanctimonious. I like to have fun too. Sometimes I play with the dog. I do stuff. But in terms of our work life, the people who really are self-sacrificing, those people who don't care about, it can't be fun for a cardiologist to see patients nights and weekends rather than watch a funny movie and go out to eat and play with their dog. And yet they realize if they are a really good cardiologist, they're going to save lives. And the heck with their individual life being more fun. It's, you know, I'm not asking them to do something that's torturous for them. So if somebody is terrible at being a cardiologist, sure, they should probably get out of the profession or do or work, or certainly at most have work-life balance. But somebody who's really gifted, and whether they are a fine guitar maker or they are even a marketing manager or an accounts payable clerk, let alone a cardiologist, somebody who says it is more important that I, as the accounts payable clerk, get out the bills and make sure that all the customers are paid fairly and promptly than to go and watch TV or go shopping. I really think that's cosmically a very justifiable and underappreciated way to live life. Do you completely disagree?
You're right, you're a Calvinist. I think you want to do all those good things, but there's nothing wrong with bringing in treats for your coworkers, which makes the day fun, or doing little surprises, leaving people nice notes, thanking them for things. There are lots of ways to have fun that are beyond just going out and buying yourself, as you would say, fur coats, because you keep thinking about your mother. The rest of us can find ways to make every day. If you're a cardiologist, you're still working with a group of people, and there's no particular reason to be grumpy about it.
No, I didn't say be grumpy. I just said work rather than have fun. You can be pleasant in your work environment. I'm not saying being curmudgeon in your work, but I'm talking about, you know, this notion of aiming to have fun. Like you want to get this new sofa. You know, even the spending, you know,
that has nothing to do with fun. That's just a reasonable thing to do.
Let's go off this. Let's go off to another. Let's get real. Let's get very down and dirty career tip thing. So this is another thing from my nugget file. A way to get a job through the back door is to write a really great letter to the employer or two that you really love to work for, or 10, asking if you could job shadow and volunteer to help for 1 to 3 days. Because that most of them will say, I'm sorry, we can't. We've got union rules, we've got these rules, we've got that rules. But if you send enough letters to your target employers or for asking if you could job shadow them, and then if you like them after the job shadow, offering to volunteer for a day or three, that might help you get in the door and get a job quickly rather than through the front door, which is answering the ads. What's your reaction to that? Would that work at all in your mind?
Well, I'm trying to think, if somebody sent me a letter and asked if they could job shadow me, I would probably say yes. And if I found them to be particularly competent and a pleasant person, I might make recommendations to other people I knew who were looking for someone to do a particular job that this person would fit. Or I would try to notify them of opportunities that I heard about. Yes.
Okay, very good. So let's go to my next little tip in the nugget file. Tell me what you think of this. We all like praise, everybody. But the kind of praise that would be particularly welcome is when a person is feeling insecure in the area. So, for example, let's say you said to me that, Marty, you're really doing a much better job of being judicious, to use your term, in the amount of interrupting you do. I would particularly appreciate that because it's a self-perceived weakness. Or, for example, I hate that I'm 15 pounds overweight. And if somebody says, you know, gee, you're looking quite good, even though I know what the scale says, it would make me feel better. So complimenting people in their area of self-perceived weakness is something to keep in mind. Again, as long as you're doing it honestly. What's your reaction to that, Tim?
My reaction is that if you scratch the surface, most of us are insecure in so many arenas.
Sure.
That any kind of a compliment is very welcome. Even though other people may perceive us as being particularly good in something, we don't always feel that way. I think we really are a whole bunch of little kids wandering around in grown-up bodies. And whatever you thought of yourself as a kid, and as a kid, because you're young and vulnerable and you don't know a whole lot, you have lots of self-doubt. I think that we all have tremendous insecurities. I'm always amazed when I talk to people and find out that they worry about this or that, they don't think they're good enough, when I think they're wonderful. So I think a legitimate compliment, you can't just give a compliment that has no relationship to what you've seen the person do or how they look or whatever, but legitimate compliments, we so often think to ourselves, oh, that was, I really like what he said, but we don't say it to them. Or, oh, I really like the way she looked, but I don't say it. Make a conscious effort to look for the things that are going through your head and say them.
Always taking the other side. One of the things that a boss was very candid in admitting to me many years ago, and it rings still in my brain, he said he really is deliberately very stingy in giving compliments because what ends up happening is that too often it results in the worker then being more complacent, unless the person is really a star and is driven anyway. But if it's, let's say, somebody who is not that hard a worker, and you catch them doing something good and they're suddenly working a little harder, and you praise them, it's more likely to engender more complacency rather than get them work harder. And for anybody, when you praise, you make them feel like maybe they could go and ask for a raise when they're really, you know, the boss doesn't have the money to give a raise. And so bosses are deliberately stingy with giving praise. What's your take on the wisdom of that?
Well, in the public sector, where salary schedules are pretty much defined, the notion that some compliment that I give an employee is going to make them ask for a raise just doesn't pass.
I know that, because you're limited by the rules of the public sector.
And so many people do work for public agencies, yeah, or even private agencies that may have particular salary schedules, and they, you don't just get a raise because, yeah, somebody says you did something nice. In my mind, if I catch an employee doing something particularly good, I want to compliment them because I think it makes people strive even more to get the compliment again. So they're going to work, rather than slacking off, I think they're going to work a little bit harder.
Yeah, I think it depends on the person again. And I think, look, standard behaviorist theory says that, yes, you positively reinforce the desirable behaviors and you punish the negative behaviors. So, yes, logic says that's right. I know myself, I find that maybe it's because I'm not worthy of any, I get very few compliments. I write a column every week for U.S. News and for another one for AOL, and they publish them all the time, every week, like clockwork, but they rarely, you know, thank me or give me praise or whatever. And every once in a while they do, it's what I call a highly intermittent reinforcement. And I think the rarity of the praise somehow actually is somewhat motivating to me. Does that at all make sense?
Well, yes, I think if somebody goes around praising everybody for tiny little things all day long, it loses any meaning. I'm not suggesting that one should just be little Susie Sunshine and say, oh, I like your smile this morning. But, I agree with that. It's got to be sort of intermittent, not predictable. But I do think that we could compliment a little bit more than we tend to do.
Okay, well, here's something intermittent, which I don't know if this is a positive. I don't think it's a positive reinforcement. This is the one time right now. We haven't in 8 months. There has not been a membership drive here at KALW. This is the one time right now in these last few minutes of this Work with Marty and Emco. If you want to support Work with Marty and Emco, every dollar is indeed a support to this kind of anomalous show on KALW. It's not your typical KALW show. If you want to support Work with Marty and Emco, this is the time to do it. 1-800-525-9917. And the basic membership's $50. Some people have given a dollar a day, $365. Others have given as much as $1,000. But if you give $75, you will get a free autographed copy of my book, How to Do Life What They Didn't Teach You in School. $150 or $275 for a couple. The really fun, fabulous thing, really, because I'm saying this, you notice I'm not using any hype in any of this. The only word I use hype for is this brunch, because people love it. You get to come to brunch on June 30th with Barbara and me, sitting in the show, we watch the show right in here in the studio, and then we have brunch, we talk about the show, we network, we laugh, and a lovely little brunch, and that's a great thing to do, and you'll be supporting Work with Marty Nemco. A couple, that's 275 supports from Work with Marty Nemco and Barbara Nemco. And you get to come to brunch on June 30th and support KALW Public Radio. If you like public radio, I certainly do. 1-800-525-9917, KALW.org. If you don't want to talk to our nice volunteers but would rather make your donation online, KALW.org. Barbara, again, this the whole notion, which I really like that KALW is doing now, is called Shorter is Better. So we're doing short pledge pitch breaks and short. The whole thing is going to be a total of 7 days. This is the only hour right now where you can support Work with Marty Nemco. So Shorter is Better. If you like Shorter is Better, show that support for that as well at 1-800-525-9917, so we can just do programming and not do membership drives. Or go
and
to KALW.
I was thinking, what do you mean shorter? I've heard lots of pitches during this hour. It used to be two different Sundays were pledge drive. Yeah. Now it's only one. So this really is your only chance. Don't think that you can do it next Sunday and you'll wait until then.
It's also shorter. I'm sorry I interrupted because I can't help it. Because it's shorter. It used to be like these six-minute endless pledge breaks, you know, where we do this 2 minutes now. So it's shorter. Each one is shorter. And it's all done in this 1 hour rather than, you know, like you said, 2 weeks. 1-800-525-9917 or KALW.org. And I interrupted you again. So please tell me now what you were going to say.
So as Mrs. Stray Caution, funny girl, would say, so what are you waiting for? So go to your computer or pick up your phone and call. Call and make a pledge.
1-800-525-9917. The reason she's Mrs. Straykosh, because she is playing the comic relief character in Funny Girl. We're not soliciting anything because it's sold out at the Napa Valley Opera House. Okay, we're going through items that are in my nugget file that are related to career, kind of that I wanted to get share with you, my dear listeners, and you, Barbara, and get your honest reactions. You know, for a long time, standard career counseling advice is, have a 30-second elevator pitch. But I find that that doesn't work at all. First of all, it sounds very canned. You know, I hear these, I do a lot of speaking at like events for unemployed folks. And, you know, you hear them give their 30-second pitch and they say, well, I am a marketing professional with 30 years of experience and blah, blah, blah. It sounds so hokey and like desperate. I really prefer something very brief. Instead of a 30-second elevator speech, I think I'd call it a 10-second urinal pitch or something, where you say something very briefly, like, you know, I was a good marketing manager in the area of environmental products, but then they sent all the jobs off to India, so I'm looking for a job again. I always got good evaluations. Might you know somebody I should talk with? See how that's much more conversational. It's brief. It doesn't sound like these scripted 30-second elevator pitches. Do you agree that that's the 10-second urinal pitch is a lot better than the 30-second elevator pitch?
I didn't think that was a urinal pitch. I think that was. It's not the 30-second elevator pitch that's wrong. It's the words that were being used for that pitch that were ridiculous. They were stilted. They were self-aggrandizing, and nobody talks like that.
Right.
Yes, have a 30-second elevator pitch, but make it what you would say if you were talking to your next-door neighbor about what you do. You wouldn't say, I'm an organized self-starter who has succeeded beyond expectations. That's not what you'd say.
Yep.
So say it the way you would say it. Stand in front of a mirror, talk to yourself until it feels really comfortable and really natural.
From what it's worth, I think 30 seconds of talking about yourself is too long. It sounds too desperate. Why, you know, let's say you were fired from your job as the Napa County Superintendent of Schools and right, and you're looking for a job, and you're at one of the endless, you know, networking events or opportunities too. What would you say? in an attempt to try to get networking?
I would say I had a wonderful experience for 16 years as Napa County Superintendent of Schools. Now I'm looking to branch out and do something a little bit different in whatever it was I was looking for.
I would give that a C. I would not give that, you don't.
But I hope I don't run into you in the elevator.
Yeah, because people are always wondering, if you're so good, why'd you lose your job? I think it is critical.
I lost my job because there are plenty of people today who leave jobs for many reasons other than being fired.
Yeah, right.
They retire because they want to do something new. They want to give back. They are tired of doing what they were doing. And I think there's no particular reason in your elevator speech to say, hey, by the way, I got canned. You're saying, I don't think you want to badmouth whatever job you were doing or the employer.
I think that's right. But I think if you leaving a question unanswered, it makes people think the worst. So if you just say, I've been a superintendent for 16 years, I'm looking for another job, they will assume you were fired for, what reaches the newspapers all the time is superintendents are fired for misappropriation of funds, incompetency, this, that. So, any kind of an honest answer is better than saying nothing. So let me take a shot. If I were... let go as superintendent of schools of Napa County, and I was at a networking event and I'm trying to get a job, I would say something like this. They ask, how are you doing? I'm doing, I've actually done better. I was so happy here as superintendent of schools for 16 years. And then I ran into a personality conflict with one of the board members. So all of a sudden, 16 years of good turned into my getting replaced. And so I'm looking for my next job and hoping to land one because I feel I've got a lot more to contribute. Do you like or dislike that?
That wouldn't be the first thing I would say. That would be my second thing, because I think if you say to somebody, I have this wonderful experience and now I'm looking for something else, they're going to say, what made you decide to leave? And that's a perfect time to say, well, to tell the truth, just what you said. But I wouldn't lead with that. Oh, by the way, I've just been fired from my job and I want something else. I wouldn't be so interested.
Do know how brief, but notice how brief. That was about 10 seconds. Imagine I went on three times as long as that. That's 30 seconds, which is the standard recommended elevator pitch. Wouldn't that seem way too much?
Yes. No, I agree with you. Okay. I agree with you. I think a 10-second elevator pitch is just fine.
Okay, let's move on to the next of the items in the Nugget File. By the way, let our listeners know you're listening to Work with Marty Nemko and Barbara Nemko here on KALW. I'm digging into my Nugget File, which is simply a word processing file I create to keep track of all of the ideas that I've come across that I think are worthy of you, my dear listeners. Next one is... here is an under-the-radar, six-figure salary healthcare career that most people have never heard of. Anesthesiologist assistant. Apparently, there are three levels of anesthesiology caregivers in the hospital. There's the anesthesiologist, who makes $300,000 or $400,000 a year. Then there is the nurse anesthetist, who in kind of routine cases will be doing the anesthesia, and she or he makes, maybe 150. And then there is the anesthesiologist assistant, who will work along with the anesthesiologist or the nurse anesthetist, and that person makes $100,000 a year.
Wow.
Yeah. I am very always interested in the under-the-radar career, so there's one. Since you went, wow, why don't I share some other careers that... I think would be of interest to folks that are more under the radar.
Yeah.
And because you proudly proclaim yourself as a funster as opposed to Calvinist Marty Nemko, I will try to mention some careers that I think are both under the radar and that most people would find fun. Pyrotechnician. Every time you go whether it be the city of Berkeley or the Oakland Coliseum or whatever, they have fireworks. There are a team of people who put those together. They're very computerized, but they still have these really cool, enormous shells that produce these amazing things. Pyrotechnician, is that not a cool career that's fun and under the radar?
Well, not to me, but yeah, I guess some people might find it that way.
Okay, let's try another one that might be fun for you. Again, this is not just about you or about me. This is about what might be interesting to some people in the general listenership here of KALW. So, a store merchandiser. every time a store gets a refresh for a new season or whatever, or certainly when a new store opens up, they hire people called merchandisers to do the store windows, to do the table displays, to do what goes on the walls, everything. And so for the aesthetically oriented person, store merchandiser is an under the radar and yet kind of very fun career. Make sense?
Where do I sign up? That sounds great.
Okay.
I want to be a mystery shopper sometime in my life.
Yeah, mystery shoppers, fine. It's $10 an hour. There's a lot of $10 to $15 mystery shopper jobs where you basically go in there's these agencies that hire mystery shoppers to go into various stores, and you pretend you're a customer, and then you write a brief report afterwards about your experience. A good kind of a semi-retirement career. It's good for somebody who's looking for a little part-time work, a little bits and pieces. That's a nice option.
Absolutely. Okay. Yep. Little supplement, fun money.
Yep. Here's another under-the-radar one, and this one I found in Consumer Reports. Consumer Reports talks now about this new field called garden coaches. Let's say we as a homeowner, we don't need a landscape architect. It's going to cost thousands of dollars. We're not going to try to put moats around our house. And we don't need a full-time gardener. For about $150, garden coaches will come to your home and help you identify what plants you have, recommend new plants that should stay or go, answer any questions. And there's this cool software that can be used to help design your own little garden. I think for many people who love the outdoors, love design, love plants, that being a garden coach is a kind of a simple business one could start. It doesn't require much money to start it, you know. What do you think of that as a under-the-radar yet fun potential career?
Absolutely. I love it.
Okay. Should I throw one? I mean, do you want to throw one, or you want me to keep doing this? Is there a career you've heard of that's under-the-radar and that you would consider fun that you'd want to share, you want me to keep going?
Yeah, the one that I like a lot is organizer downsizer. There are so many people today who may live in McMansions. The children have grown up, they've gone away, and it seems crazy to have such a large house, or really older people who are moving into an assisted living facility and having to dismantle the household that has so many things and boxes and stuff is overwhelming to them. There are people who will come in and help them organize, figure out what needs to go, what needs to stay, and just get it done for them.
Okay. We're talking, these are kind of self-employment ideas. Let me throw out a couple of other self-employment ideas that I really like. Everybody, it used to be that finding your romantic partner online was seen as, you know, not great. And yet more and more people are doing it. There's more and more of these websites, everything from Christian Mingles or Christian Singles, whatever it is, to, J-Date for Jews, or Match.com, gay, lesbian, bisexual, gay dating matchup services. But everybody knows how critical the ad is. The ad has got to be great. You know, what your picture's got to be great, what you say, what you want in the other person, what you say you're like, and people are scared. It's very high stakes. If you want to hook up with somebody for more than a night and you really want a real relationship, you know, it's very critical to write that ad. So I think it's a wonderful self-employment idea to be a Match.com, so to speak, ad coach. What do you think?
That's interesting, because we had a discussion the other day about resumes, and you were all about writing your own resume. Otherwise, you were cheating the employer because you were only presenting your very best self, and maybe there was some exaggeration. No. How is this different?
Completely different. When you are writing a resume, the employer is using that to assess your writing ability, your ability to organize your resume in a very precise format, so that there's no spelling errors. When you're looking for a relationship, those are not so central. We're not asking anybody to hype anybody. We're just trying to gain clarity about who you are. The picture needs to reflect who you are. You know, no Match.com ad coach would. All these photos they should be tight headshots that don't look too sexy, but somewhat sexy. Those are things that we're not trying to obfuscate in any way. It's completely different.
Okay, if you say so.
I
I'm
do.
Thinking of some of the pictures that I have of me that are spectacular, and if that's all somebody saw and then they saw the real me, they might be disappointed.
Right, and what I'm saying is the really good relationship ad coach would not at all focus on that. They would want you to take a realistic picture because they're going to see you sooner or later anyway. So what is good if you put a picture of you that looks like a sex symbol and that you're a 20-year-old picture? No, a really good relationship ad coach as well as a career coach would help people reveal their real selves, not some phony self. And on that note, I want to be very real with you, my dear listeners. There literally are 4 minutes and 30 seconds left for you. If you care about keeping Work with Marty Nemco on the air and you want to support us, because the KELW Pledge Drive, membership drive, is shorter is better, this is it. There's 4 minutes left.
We need you now.
Yeah, and it really, we get none of the money. This is not for us. This is for KELW, keeping public radio on the air. So if you want to support public radio and keep Work with Marty Nemco and Barbara Nemco on the air, each dollar is a vote for Work with Marty and Barbara. This is the time to call 1-800-525-9917. That's 1-800-525-9917. And this is a particularly good time to do that, not just because there's only 4 minutes left, but because two very kind people from Berkeley, James Bloom and Catherine Frank, have said they will pitch an additional $500 if we do sell the, if you will, sell is the right word, I guess, 12 brunches. That is, on June 30th, up to 12 people can come to have brunch with Barbara and me. They can watch the show first from 11 a.m. to noon, watch us right here in the studio. And then we have this lovely brunch, which is fun and networking opportunity. It's $150 for one person, $275 for two. People who have come before said it's fabulous. They've really enjoyed it. 1-800-525-9917. 1-800-525-9917. Or if you prefer to not talk to our lovely and wonderful KALW volunteers, you can do it online at kalw.org. Barbara, what do you want to say?
Or if they prefer not to talk to us, they can just donate $150 and not come to brunch.
Yeah, that's true. 1-800-525-9917. This is really very sweet. We've had people specifically call and want to be mentioned on the air. So I want to specifically thank Leslie from San Francisco, Alvin Warwas from Berkeley, Judy Nachtenberg from Berkeley, Elaine Shell from San Francisco, Debbie Rabe from San Mateo, and somebody, Nancy Wilson, who says the Academy Award for Interrupters goes to Chris Matthews in Hardball. So I want to thank all of them, and I want to thank you. If you, dear listeners, we would love to meet you. We really find it fun. I'm not a social guy, to tell you the truth, but at the brunch on June 30th, it is an honor to meet you, and I do enjoy meeting you, and I won't be too shy.
It'll be birthday cake.
Yeah, it'll be a little birthday cake. Come join us. It's $150 for one person. Again, doesn't go to me, doesn't go to Barbara, goes to KALW. Support public radio. Support Work with Marty Nemco. This is the last chance, truly. This is the procrastinator special. If you were ever thinking about coming to brunch or supporting public radio or supporting Work with Marty Nemco, supporting Barbara Nemco, this is the time to do it. 1-800-525-9917. 1-800-525-9917.
One more thing. One more thing, lest people think there will only be birthday cake. There will be bagels and lox, Barbara Nemco's famous homemade quiche, as well as fruit salad and birthday cake. So come on down. It'll be a great breakfast and a great opportunity.
1-800-525-9917. Truly the last chance. Really, in another minute, it is over. You can't support Work with Marty Nemco. You know, this is the hour that it counts for Work with Marty Nemco. 1-800-525-9917. And if I can be allowed a little bit of idealism, you know, public radio does open the hearts and minds to diverse thoughts that you won't hear on commercial radio. And if you like, forget about Work with Marty Nemco. If you want to support public radio, if you listen to KLW, you like KLW's information programs or music programs, this is a great time to call right now in this last minute of Work with Marty Nemco. And you can, and the challenge grant, $500 gets added more if we get the 12 people to come to brunch. 1-800-525-9917. $150 for one person, $275 for a couple. Come to brunch. 1-800-525-9917. And that is, I want to thank you all. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. That is Work with Marty Nemco and Barbara Nemco for this week. Thank you, Joanne Marr, as usual, and all of you for listening. Next Sunday, the entire hour, 3 minute workovers on callers, and I will intersperse my favorite new career tips. Until next Sunday, this is Marty Nemco for Barbara Nemco, reminding you that we find comfort among those who agree with us, growth among those who don't.